All right. Thanks for coming to my talk, A Decade in Certificate Transparency and What May Come Next. Before we start, a quick disclaimer. I will mention a bunch of organizations here. I'm not affiliated to any of them. The views that I express here are mostly my own. While I think they largely express some sort of consensus within this community, I do not claim to represent the certificate transparency community ecosystem or any organization within it other than myself. This is not the first talk about certificate transparency at a CCC event. There are a bunch of really good ones I have linked to here. These ones will go into a lot of detail that I will omit today. If you're interested in this after this talk and want to know more, I would urge you to watch these talks as well. Why I think it makes sense to have another talk is that these ones are now 10 years ago, and when they were presented, this protocol was a new thing. It just had been recently standardized, and the rollout was just happening, just starting. So these people were talking a lot in a future tense. And now we have like 2025 vision, and with the power of hindsight, we can reevaluate a little bit of what has happened in the last 10 years. And I also want to give a little bit of an outlook what might come for this protocol. Nonetheless, I need to kind of give a bit of an introduction into certificate transparency itself, what it is, why we want it. This is a kind of a recap. So if we go back to 2016, if you went on the internet and you entered a URL with a certain chance you would get an HTTPS connection. In 2016, HTTP was still around a lot, which in retrospect sounds a bit horrible, but it was like that. But you could also get an HTTPS connection. And that would mean that your connection to the server would be confidential and authenticated. And this authentication part would work by the server sending your certificate that you would then validate by checking that it's domain matches the domain that you entered, and you would also validate that the certificate can be trusted by validating the certificate chain from the certificate up to some sort of root certificate that your browser trusts. And it has a trust store where it stores certificates that it trusts by default. And in 2016, you would have around 180 root certificate authorities in this trust store. And you would also have around 1,800 intermediate certificate authorities that could also issue basically a certificate for any domain. And you would basically rely that all of these 2,000 organizations do what they're supposed to all the time. And none of these organizations has, out of negligence or because they're corrupt or they're malicious, issued a certificate for a domain that they were not supposed to. And if this assumption was broken, an attacker could basically become a meddler in the middle between you and the actual server and inject themselves into the TLS connection. This is not a theoretical thing. There are a bunch of examples where something like this has happened. The most famous one, the big one that everybody talks about in this context, because it literally spawned the whole certificate transparency idea, was the DigiNotar hack of 2011. There are really, like, these other talks go into more detail, but the short story is they got infiltrated. The attackers were issuing rogue certificates, really spicy stuff, including Google.com, WindowsUpdate.com, Mozilla.org. The response from the company was very delayed. Multiple times they claimed that they had fixed the issue, but then new certificates popped up. And in the end, they just got kicked out of the root store. And with that, their business model was gone, and they went bankrupt. And these certificates were used in actual attacks, mostly targeted at Iran. So this really happens. This is not something that just like security researchers make up in their minds. And the problem is that you have to trust all of these CAs all the time, and you don't really have any good way of judging whether they're trustworthy or not. And I mean, there is an audit process, a certification process, but that's like not the kind of stuff that most people can just look into. And what would be much nicer is if there was some sort of public record where you could see whether CAs are behaving the way you want them to or not. And this is the idea behind certificate transparency. So the like high-level idea is that you just require the CAs to log all the certificates that they issue in some sort of public log. They get, they have to kind of prove that they actually do this. This has been standardized in the RFC 6962. This was very fresh in 2016, which is why all these talks are around that time. Yeah, I have to mention there's also, there are other ways in which you can use the certificate transparency, but they have never seen real adoption. So they're not really being used. So before 2016, this is how you would issue a certificate. You, the domain owner, would go to your CA and say, hi, I need a certificate. You would run some sort of protocol to prove that you are who you claim you are. Very long time ago, this might have been sending letters back and forth, but already in 2016, you would have run something like ACME RFC 8555 to prove that you own that domain and then get your certificate. And then after certificate transparency was a thing, there are new parties involved, the log operators. So the certificate authority cannot just send back to you a certificate, it needs to issue a pre-certificate, which is effectively the same thing, but with some special fields indicating that it's a pre-certificate. Send this to the log operator. The log operator sends back an artifact called a signed certificate timestamp. And then the certificate authority would include this into the certificate before it finally signs it and sends it back to you. Of course, the log operators not only have to do this, but they also then have to log the thing. And the way this is done is in a Merkle tree. You can also enter a full certificate there, like after you issued it already. This is called cross-posting. So there are both pre-certs and full certificates in this log. And then the log operator also publishes regularly. Basically, the tree head of that Merkle tree with a signature that you can then fetch. So I don't want to go into too much detail how this actually works under the hood, because the other talks do this really well. And just for anybody who wants to have like a broad idea how this looks like, you hash the certificates, those become the leaf nodes, and then you pairwise hash them up the tree. You refer to the nodes by the interval of the entries that they cover. And then this is a left-leaning tree in this sense. Like, there are multiple ways, if you have an unbalanced tree, how to hash that thing up. And it's done in this way. This is important for some technical details, if anybody is interested in this, but basically you just pairwise hash entries up until you get a single hash, and that's your tree head. And then if you want to validate this log, you need to have one of these signed tree heads, and then you can validate the signature. You need the public key of the log, of course, for that. And then you can request inclusion proofs from the log, which means you can check that a specific entry is included in the logs. And then there's another thing that you can do that's called an extension proof, where you have two tree heads, an older one and a newer one, and you want to have a proof that the newer one is an extension of the older one, i.e. it contains all the entries that the old one has, plus some new ones that have been added since. So in 2026, your browser has not has effectively two trust stores, one for CAs, root CAs, and one for these logs. This is basically, a log is basically a URL and a public key. And when you type in a domain into your web browser today, not only will you with 100% certainty get an HTTPS connection, hopefully, but when the certificate is being evaluated, it will do all the stuff that it did in 2016, plus it will require that your certificate contains these signed certificate timestamps, either 2 or 3. That depends on the lifetime of the certificate. If it's going to live longer, shorter than 180 days, then 2 is sufficient. Otherwise, it needs to be 3. And they need to match the logs from the log store of your browser. And if this is not the case, the certificate will be rejected. So yeah, one might think that we're done, that certificate transparency is everywhere. It's being rolled out. Browsers require it today. So everything is good, right? Well, if we look a bit more into the last 10 years and the details, we will find out that there is a lot of things yet to be done. Some of this is because there were things that were underestimated in the original design that have become stuff that we need to take care of now. And there's also things where the adoption of the original design has not really caught on. And I think this makes this whole ecosystem or this whole protocol less secure than it could be. But I also think this is relatively easy to fix. And this is why I want to give this talk, to make you all aware of that and maybe motivate you to also work on this. So first, let's take a look at the current log operators. These are the log operators in braces I wrote where they're incorporated. Doesn't mean that they run the logs from the specific country where they're incorporated, but this is where they have their headquarters and where somebody can come knocking if they want to. We can see that out of the 8 current log operators, 5 are incorporated in the US. Those are very different organizations internally, I know, like Google and Let's Encrypt work very differently as an organization, but they're in the same jurisdiction in the US. And then if we look at the actual distribution of certificates, we see not only are those the are 5 of the 8 in the US, but they're also the biggest ones, and collectively they make up almost 85% of all certificates being logged. So for me, the takeaway here is there's not enough logs, we need more, because 8 is kind of a low number. If some of these organizations give up being log operators in the future, we might get into trouble with this. And also, 5 of them are in the US. So we are even only barely possible to make valid long-term certificates without involving US organizations for the web at this point in time, because you need 3 log operators and we only have 3 non-US ones at this point. You might ask yourself, who gets to decide who is a log operator and who isn't? Effectively, Chromium gets to decide that at this point in time, because the Chromium source code contains a log list that is regularly updated, and this is kind of the consensus log list for basically all browsers. So Chromium and Firefox, to my knowledge, use this directly. Safari has its own log list, but it's a very similar one, and it kind of closely follows the Chromium and Firefox story, although it might, in theory, also... I mean, it's not the same list. It's a bit different, but they are very similar in general. And these lists are not only checked into the repositories, they're also served online, so you can check them out yourself. I put the URLs up there. Chromium does not decide this on a whim. They have a process that's actually very transparent and very sensical, how to become a log operator. So what you have to do if you want to be a log operator, you have to write them an application via the Chromium bug tracker. That's a bit weird, but I guess that's a a historical artifact because this whole effort kind of grew out of Chromium. You have to submit a lot of contact information. This is like email addresses and I think phone numbers, the public keys, URLs of your log. The maximum merge delay is the time that you have after answering with a signed certificate timestamp and until you have to actually include it in the log. And then you have to keep your log running. Google will test it. This means initially a spec compliance test where they will just basically kick the tires of your log implementation, will run some corner cases and so on. And then later this means that they will run a reliability test where you have to maintain 99% uptime. Generally, a log operator does not only run one log. The modus operandi is effectively that they do something called temporal sharding, where they have multiple intervals between 3 months and 1 year, usually half a year. And then all certificates that expire within this interval should be logged to logs of that shard. The idea here is that once this time has passed, all certificates that are in this log are expired. And that means you don't have to maintain the uptime of this log anymore. It's a bad idea to delete it right out. You should like do some archiving, but you don't have to keep that thing online, and that's very nice. And then usually there's also one more than one log per the shard for redundancy, because sometimes logs break, there's something wrong with them, and you have to take them down. And having more than one is good practice. Usually they also use different implementations. This whole thing is coordinated via two Google groups. Certificate transparency is the one for general discussions. This is where the standard itself, the implementation details, and so on are being discussed. CT policy is the one where the action happens where the incidents are being reported, and coordination between browser vendors and log operators has to happen. So this is the one where all the day-to-day action happens. Yeah. Generally, I think the system works very well. The discussions are generally very constructive and nice. Of course, there's the occasional exception, as in any mailing list. But I think this governance model works very well. The fact that it's on Google Groups is a bit... Yeah, it's a bit of a decentralization issue in my opinion, but I think in general there has developed a good governance system for this ecosystem. We have to talk a little bit about the log lists themselves. So one of the issues that has come up during the last 10 years that was kind of not anticipated is this whole log list distribution management stuff. So the log list schema that is used by everyone today is not part of the standard. It's some ad hoc thing that the Chromium developers came up with when they needed it. The standard just assumes your browser already has the list from somewhere and does not concern itself how you get it, how you keep it up to date, and so on. But this ad hocness, this non-standard way of doing this, has created problems. So there is this incident that happened a few years back. There was an Android library that did certificate transparency enforcement. It used this endpoint that I linked back a few slides, but it used the version 2 of the file and not the version 3. Google then needed to change the schema because they needed to add new fields, and they did this the right way with a nice deprecation warning many years prior and so on. But of course, developers missed this anyway because this is a library, this is not their main app, and they had forgotten that they had this dependency on this old library that needed an update, or they were never aware of it because, like, I don't know, the guy who did it left the company or whatever. And then whenever Google wanted to shut down this V2 endpoint, the CT policy mailing list flooded with developers panicking because their apps broke and the update path broke and 100 million users were affected or something. This is what they said. I cannot verify if these things are actually true. But every time Google wanted to shut down the V2, people panicked. And this happened more than once. They postponed this multiple times. But they cannot keep the V2 running forever because there are fields missing in there that are needed in the future. So there is no full backwards compatibility forever. And then they came up with this workaround where they added two logs to the V2 that they called mimics that don't exist. And they published the private keys that belong to the public keys that they serve in this V2 endpoint. And then said to these affected developers, take the private keys, make your own signed certificate timestamps out of them, and ask your certificate authority to include those into your certificate as well. And ideally do this and also put real SCTs in such that your certificate is valid both with this old library that isn't updated and also with recent browsers and recent libraries. Another issue that you kind of have with certificate transparency log lists is that you have this chicken and egg problem. You need to keep this list up to date, which usually requires you to fetch something from an HTTPS endpoint. But for that, you need to make a TLS connection, which in turn requires you to have an up-to-date log list. So you kind of have this problem that if you don't update your log list regularly enough, you end up with an outdated log list, and you have no longer the ability to update it without breaking security assumptions here. And the way web browsers approach this problem is they have an initial log list that is vendored into the browser, so you get it when you install the browser, and hopefully you have some sort of secure installation path, like a package manager on App Store, and then it's secured this way. The browsers still try to update these log lists themselves by hitting the HTTPS endpoint, but if they fail to do that for 70 days, they just fall back and deactivate certificate transparency enforcement altogether. I can understand why this decision was made. The user experience would be horrible if your browser would just stop working if you updated it not often enough. But also this kind of breaks a lot of the security that certificate transparency is supposed to give you, because I mean some state-level actor that wants to use rogue certificates is also has the ability to just block GStatic in a whole country and then shut down certificate transparency enforcement for everyone. And most people will not notice or care, but the people that are at risk of this type of attacks will be vulnerable. And then there's also the issue of non-web browser clients, like your regular TLS client libraries that you have in Python or wherever. And Google's stance here is, don't use certificate transparency. It's not for you. If you do it, you're on your own. It's an understandable standpoint from Google's perspective because they had a lot of trouble with this Android library incident. And they don't want to be responsible for stuff that they don't really control. And they don't want to fix other people's problems, so they have the stance. But it also is a bit cheap, in my opinion, because I clearly see that there is a need to do certificate transparency enforcement in non-web browser TLS clients. As an example here, I'm not 100% sure about this because I have like read conflicting things about this Notepad++ attack, but to my understanding, a rogue certificate was used in this attack, and this updater, this WinGAP, does not do certificate transparency enforcement. And that means a single rogue certificate that was not locked anywhere was sufficient to do this. And if it would do certificate transparency enforcement, this attack would have been more involved. I will tell you later why it would not have been impossible, probably, but it would have been more difficult than what was carried out. Okay, now we have talked about some stuff that kind of had to be fixed while things were rolling out, but you might also ask yourself, is there anything happening on the standards front? Are we good with the standard that we have, or do we want to change things now? There is a new standard for certificate transparency, RFC 9162, that officially obsoletes RFC 6962. It is mostly concerned with crypto agility, like that's the big update in my opinion, because in the old standard a lot of crypto primitives were just fixed, and this new standard allows you to like plug them and switch them for new stuff. It arrived with 5 years of delay, means 5 years later than everybody was expecting it to arrive. I saw one of the authors that actually wrote this RFC right on the mailing list. It was too little too late. So even the authors themselves were not really happy with this outcome here. And it was never adopted. So nobody, no browser, no lock operator, nobody in this whole ecosystem has, to my knowledge, currently attempted to run one of these locks ever. There is something that happened instead. There is this what is called static CT API, and this solves a problem that lock operators had, which is that in the old RFC 6962, when you request an inclusion proof or an extension proof, you basically say, I want to have it for this entry, and then the browser gives you the Merkle path for that proof back. And this, of course, means the browser has to do computation on the request to give you the right response. And the response is pretty much only for this one particular request. You cannot reuse any of this data. So this is bad for caching. And the idea was, instead of doing this, we store the whole Merkle tree in a static file format that is standardized, that everybody understands, and you just fetch yourself the stuff that you need and build this thing yourself. And this allows us to use static file servers in the real read path. It means we can do geo-replication. It means we can do caching. We can put this whole thing behind a content distribution network, and this makes it much cheaper to run a lock like this. Here is how this kind of works. So in certain layers of the Merkle tree, you just serialize a chunk of the nodes into a file that gets a name. This is not the naming scheme that is used because it's a bit more involved, but basically you just map the nodes to tiles. You have a two-way mapping. You don't map all nodes to tiles, only certain layers. You have the ability to have partial tiles where basically it's just shorter. In this graphic, I'm using tiles with two nodes and every second layer. In the actual implementation, it's 256 nodes and you serialize only every eighth layer. But it still means that it's relatively cheap to recompute any node in the tree by just fetching the right tile and then doing 512 hashes to have all the nodes back that you want. So this is kind of an awkward situation. We have an official IETF standard that nobody really uses, and we have this static CT standard that is also official, but it's not official in the sense that it comes from a standard body. It's a thing that the community developed themselves. Filippo Valsorda was a big driver of this. And this is what everybody uses, and the other thing is something that nobody uses. And it's really funny that every time somebody new comes to this ecosystem and they try to understand what is what, they end up reading this RFC 9162, only to find out that it's completely irrelevant, even though it looks so nice and so official. And there's like a bunch of other documents that are much more important that are not official standard bodies. I do understand how we ended up like this. the static CT API solved a problem that was very immediate for log operators, because running logs as cheaply as possible is very important in the here and now, while crypto agility is kind of the thing that you may want to have if for the longevity of the protocol and for like smoother rollouts and so on. And it's a future problem. It's not a now problem, because you will need this when we have like when we need post quantum signatures or so on, and that's not right now. So I understand that we are like this right now. It's a bit weird, but it's mostly just a hurdle for entry into this. It's not such a big deal in my opinion. I also want to talk about adoption. In 2016, if you ask somebody to draw you how they would imagine the ecosystem of this protocol to work, they would have shown you something like this. In the top, you see these three actors that we already had in the beginning: domain owners, certificate authorities, and CT logs. Down here, bottom left, that's the clients and the browsers. And then you have these two other actors, monitors and auditors, here. And these are the actors that actually are supposed to look at what's in the log and then provide certain services either to the domain owners or the client's browsers. And then you also see this gossiping part here. And these three things is what I want to talk about now. Monitors are servers that follow the logs. Following or tailing means that they just copy all the data, validate all the data, and then just serve it again. But also, this usually means that they offer some additional service on top, such as a search engine like crt.sh, where you can type in your domain and see all the certificates that have been issued for that domain. You can also have them as an email alert, so that you get an email every time a certificate is issued. Sorry. Is this back on? OK. So every time you get an email when there's a new certificate for any of your domains. And this is the kind of stuff that is supposed to be used by domain owners to supervise their domains and see that all the certificates that exist for your domain or that are valid for your domain right now are the ones that you issued and that you own and nobody else. Quick question, who of you owns at least one domain? Okay, who of you has used something like crt.sh to check? That's a good portion, thanks. Who of you has email alerts for their domains when they get something issued? Yeah, that's how it's supposed to be, but even I myself don't do that. So what you can see is these monitors, they exist and they're being used. It has not become standard to use them all the time pervasively to surveil your own domains and check that all the certificates that are currently valid are the ones that you own. It should be. I wish we would get there. We are not there yet, and this includes myself. I'm also too lazy to keep this up to date all the time. Then there is auditing. Auditing is needed because there is no cryptographic link between the signed certificate timestamp and the log entry. The signed certificate timestamp is effectively a promise from the log operator that it will be included. But somebody has to actually check that that happens, that the log operators do this, and it's not the browsers. I think Chromium has some mechanism, or I've read about this at some point in time, where they do like some stochastical checking, where they sometimes randomly check some of the signed certificate timestamps that they encounter. But to be honest, I couldn't fully parse how this was supposed to work, couldn't fully parse if it's actually being done or if it's just a proposal. So it's to my, and I'm a Firefox user and Firefox doesn't do any of this. There's also this idea that you could use an external auditing service. So you send your SCTs to some other place and they do the auditing for you. This is something you can also do with CRT.sh, but I mean, that's kind of very dissatisfying because you have this really cool protocol that allows you to validate all the stuff yourself, and then you just rely on another third party to do something and you trust it again. It's a bit lame. There is good reasons why browsers don't do this. It's one is scalability. Like an inclusion proof is a kind of interactive proof. Like it's not valid. You cannot just pre-compile a proof for a certificate. It has to be compiled against a specific tree head. So basically, every of these proofs is relatively unique to the user. You have to deal with failure modes. So logs are not online all the time. Hopefully 99%, but that's not 100. So how do you deal with a log if it's offline? How do you communicate this to the user? There's like this whole UX thing going on here. And then you also have this issue that there is 100 kilobyte of traffic per proof. Can be very different, like it varies wildly, but I always guess, like guesstimate 100 kilobytes. From a user's perspective, I think this is acceptable given how big requests can be. But of course, if every internet browser user of the internet does fetch these proofs all the time, and this can be quite a stress on the logs, especially in the old times before the static CT thing. And then of course there's the privacy issue that if you ask a log for an inclusion proof, they know that you care about the certificate that you just asked the inclusion proof for, and that contains the domain, so they kind of can reconstruct, or they can map your IP address to like a browsing history on the domain level, not like what kind of path you visit there, what you see there, but they know what websites you visit. Then there's this issue of gossiping. So forking a log computationally is cheap. This is not a blockchain. You have these extension proofs where you can prove that the new tree head you see is an actual extension of an old tree head, but it is not a proof that it's the only extension that exists. If you want to make sure that it's the only extension, you need to talk to other people because you cannot trust the log itself. So you would need to talk to other clients or other servers in exchange, sign tree heads with one another such that you can kind of come to a consensus what is the canonical log head currently. This is what in this context is referred to as gossiping. I know like from peer-to-peer perspective, there's not that much like peer-to-peer gossiping or something involved here, but in this context, it's just called gossiping. The existing standard is very hand-wavy about it. They say that you need this. They leave it for future exercise how to actually do this. So they have some ideas, but they leave it at that. There was a working group that was actually trying to standardize this. They came up with three gossiping methods: SCT feedback, STH signed tree head pollination, and trusted auditor relationship. I'm not even sure trusted auditor relationship is really gossiping, but yeah, they had these things. This working group died at some point in 2018. It never matured into a proper standard, and gossiping was kind of abandoned at that point, with some small exceptions of like people in the community doing like co-signing and things like that nowadays, but it has never really taken off. So if we look at the way that the ecosystem actually looks today, it looks like this. We have monitors. We have people that use the monitors, but it's not everybody, and it's not all the time. And then when it comes to this auditors and the gossiping part, this is largely a niche thing and kind of abandoned. So when it comes to the adoption of the standard, we can kind of see some of the parts have been fleshed out really well, very nice. Some other parts, not so much. And while for the horse, it's still kind of cute the way it is, for certificate transparency, that means that a threat actor could still attack your TLS connection by having one rogue certificate, and then they also need to somehow coerce two certificate transparency operators to either issue them fake signed certificate timestamps. Your browser would likely not detect that because it will never check that they don't have corresponding logs because of the missing auditing. But even if it had auditing, then these malicious log operators would just selectively serve you a fork log that includes the entries, but nobody else other than you sees it. So this would very likely go undetected. And keep in mind, like, coercing two log operators sounds difficult, but that's because we have a small number of log operators right now, and we have like a lot of like social control right now. But in the future, we want to have a lot of log operators, and log operator being a log operator should be something simple and easy, because we don't want to have the same security requirements on them than on a CA. But that also means that it's not that big of a challenge to have two malicious log operators. Okay, so at this point, it doesn't sound so nice, but I'm actually kind of convinced that it's not so, we are not so far from where we want to be. So I have been working on a project that I want to present now. It's called Lucid. The idea is very simple, actually. I think browsers should be able to do all of these things that are missing themselves. Browsers should be able to just audit logs. I don't think this needs to be like a default behavior. I don't think every browser ever should do this all the time. But I do think you should have the ability to do it if you have the security requirement for it. And then, of course, you need a gossiping mechanism, because otherwise, like, you need to plug that hole too. And the cool thing is the logs are already there. They're being operated. It's being enforced by the browsers. So we have all the information that we need to do this, and we don't need to ask anybody for more standardization or for any access or anything. We can just do this ourselves. And this is what I want to do with Lucid. It's a Firefox extension. It keeps records of the tree heads and updates them regularly, and then also checks the extension proofs. And then when you browse the internet, it fetches when you make a TLS handshake, it will extract the signed certificate timestamps from the certificates, and then just go to the logs and request inclusion proofs. This is what it looks like. Here you see this this Lucid icon. So when you enter something into your browser or you visit any website, it pops up, and then it becomes solid. The moment it pops up is when it has extracted the SCTs, and then when it becomes solid is when the checks on the SCTs pass, the inclusion proofs, and some policy stuff that I will go into later. Mostly as just like a tool when something is broken or just to show that things are happening. You can also click on it and you get a sidebar with some information. I'm still working out what I want to display here and what not, so that people can better understand it. But basically, the idea is you have your certificate for this domain, and you can see how many SCTs there are from which logs. And then you can also see some validation information when it was validated and against which tree size these proofs were validated. Of course, you want to know how to keep this private. I have this idea that's a work in progress. So it's not, I mean, I have a working proof of concept, but it's not integrated into Lucid yet, where basically there is an oblivious proxy service that you connect to via WebSockets that just forwards your data as raw TCP to the logs. And then there's an entire TLS stack compiled into the extension that you then use to make the actual TLS connection to the log. And this means that the proxy server sees your IP address and it sees what logs you talk to, but it doesn't see what entries you request from the log. And the log itself sees the entries that you request, but it doesn't have your IP address. This kind of works, given that the amount of data that has to be transmitted is small. Of course, if you already use a VPN or Tor or something, you can deactivate this and just keep using these things that are much more secure. I mean, Tor is much more secure than this, I know. But this works out of the box, and it doesn't require anyone to install anything else. So there is a working privacy solution here. What does it actually mean if you get the solid symbol? It means the things that are already required by the browser, that there are two or three SCTs in the certificate, but it also does what I call like an extended validation, which means for each SCT we check the log that belongs to this signed certificate timestamp. Does it have a tree head that is newer than 24 hours? Then we also validate the inclusion proof, but not against this tree head, but against the oldest one that we have, which of course has to have an extension proof to the newest one. And then we require that K of these extended checks validate, and K is either 1 or N. It's 1 if the oldest tree head that we validate on is older than 24 hours, otherwise, it's N. And by age, we mean the age at which we validated this thing, because they contain timestamps themselves, but I mean, those could be faked by a malicious, I mean, we cannot really make much out of them other than that they are increasing values. So if we validated something a long time ago, we can trust it because nobody else can basically manipulate data that we already have. It's kind of the line of thinking here. We also need to have gossip. We don't. I don't have this implemented. I don't even have it fully fleshed out as an idea, but generally the idea that I have might change a little bit, but it's similar to what the original document called STH pollination. Basically my idea is there are servers on the internet. They just fetch the tree heads of the logs in a regular interval, like every 24 hours or so, but at random. And then when you need to update your local tree heads, you fetch the newest one from the log itself. But then from in between this interval of the oldest one that you already, the newest one that you already have and the new one that you want to update to, you fetch all the tree heads that all of these servers have seen, bring them in the right order, and then pairwise validate extension proofs between them. And the idea here is that any of these logs in the middle, any of these checkpoint servers in the middle see a forked log, their tree heads will not have valid extension proofs to other tree heads further down the line from other servers. Of course, a malicious log might just not serve you an extension proof in that case. So they will not give you an extension proof that just doesn't validate it. They will just not talk to you anymore. And this is why you need to have like some sort of freshness requirement on the newest tree heads in the policy that I just showed you. There's even more stuff we can do. This has nothing to do with certificate transparency anymore, but I just want to throw in that this extension could also do other stuff, including doing DNS over HTTPS and cross-check some stuff from DNS servers, including CAA and TLSA records. this is something that, of course, involves then cooperation with the domain owners to actually set these values correctly. But we could imagine this and then like make everything even more secure. How cool would that be? Also, you should just have the ability to block root CAs. I think there are a bunch of root CAs that nobody ever uses, and they are just there, and they're kind of sketchy. And it would be really cool if you could just turn them off or like get a warning if there's one that you never use. You could also maybe like just track your usage of root CAs and then just turn off the ones that you don't use in like a week. And then the next time you use it, you get like a warning that this is some root CA that you have never used before or that you don't really need. So this is the scenario that we're looking at. In 2016, one rogue certificate from one malicious CA what would be enough to do a meddler in the middle attack on your TLS connection. Today, this has been extended by having two certificate lock transparency lock operators that also need to be malicious. In practice, this is currently relatively difficult, but in the long run, this is not that big of a deal to get those. And they can attack you in two ways. They can either issue fake signed certificate timestamps. This will become impossible when you use Lucid today, because the audit, they will not pass the audit part of this extended validation. But of course, you could still be served a forked lock. In practice, it's a much more involved attack, but it's also not impossible to do that. And then once we have gossiping, this attack is no longer be possible. With gossip, yeah, I'm not saying it's 100% secure if we have that. I'm pretty sure there will be other forms of attacks, but I haven't really put so much thought into what to do after this. The goal is to just plug holes and make it more and more difficult to exploit the system. So in the updated version of the ecosystem, you basically pull the auditor into your browser directly. You have this Oblivious proxy. That's a piece of infrastructure that you rely on, of course, but you don't need to trust it for the correctness of the protocol. You need to trust it for privacy because you need to trust that it does not collude with lock operators to de-anonymize you. Of course, you can also just get rid of this whole piece of infrastructure and use Tor or something. And then you have the check pointer. Here you need to trust them basically as a whole, that they are like largely correct. You don't need to trust every individual check pointer. There's an issue left that I kind of can't get rid of, which is, what if an attacker just submits a rogue certificate to the honest logs and the domain owners don't care? And this is for all the domain owners out there. Do go to crt.sh, check these things. This is really important that people keep an eye on this. Please try this at home. So anybody, go to crt.sh, play around with it. It's really important and that everybody does it. I don't know who I want to address this to, but consider becoming a lock operator if you have some compute laying around that you don't need. It's not super easy, but it's also not super difficult, and it gives you internet kudos. Please just do it if you can. And then to anybody else, take Lucid for a spin. It's not published yet. I never, you know how it is. I wanted to have something published by now, but I don't. But I do have a development version that you can try out and admire all its bugs and all its pre-alpha state. I do plan to get the auditing part working smoothly with privacy within a month or so, and then have this published in the Firefox extension store. Also help wanted, I'm working on this alone right now on my own time, and if anybody finds this cool or useful or something, I would also appreciate people. Come. I will link a Matrix channel where you can get in contact if you have questions. Now I want to give a bit of an outlook on the whole ecosystem going away from the Lucid project. this is just, these are a bunch of ideas that I just want to throw out there of things that we could do in the ecosystem to make this thing more useful. There's a thing called private information retrieval. So it's a set of protocols where you can request data from a server without the server learning what you requested. I think this would be a cool way to apply this. But of course, this needs like cryptographic research, and this is not something that I can do on my own. I think content addressable tiles would be very cool, because then also the clients could cache tiles, and maybe your organization could just build a cache for this. And then I think log management should be standardized. There are, I have two more slides, I'm almost done. There are applications of transparency logs outside of CT. There are software transparency logs. I mean, Git is effectively already one, but you can also have binary distribution ones, like the Go checksum database. Key transparency logs are a big deal, because when you have an end-to-end encrypted system, you sometimes end up with this problem that you have this key management issue, and at the end, everybody trusts some kind of key server, and if you replace the server with a log, at least if there's manipulation of the keys, it's transparent. There is this idea that you can replace this CAs with logs, where basically the TLS client says, "Hey, I know you I know I have a tree head of your CA." And give me an inclusion proof of this certificate rather than a signature. And the idea here is that in the post-quantum world, signatures might be large and difficult to verify, and just checking a bunch of hashes is much cheaper. I think this is a really cool idea. I have some doubt that CAs will adopt this. They have been a bit slow in these kind of things, but generally I think this is a really cool idea. And that's it. Thank you all so much for your attention. On the right, you find the website, the source code, a Matrix channel if you want to talk to me, the slides, and now I'm open for questions.
Many, many thanks for the deep technical insights. Great. Please, a warm applause. And besides that, many thanks for the further entries on my to-do list for my domains. Okay, I think we've got just time left for a single question. Who wants to ask one?
I see the camera.
Yeah, okay, I'm coming over to you.
If we start to use transparency logs for everything that the CA sometimes always has to do or something, that we actually validate the certificates against the certificate log, don't we just create a n times m matrix of possible problems if a CA dies or a log operator dies or is kicked out of the list because they misbehaved or something? Doesn't this just create a lot of trouble for every sysadmin?
Do you mean in this thing or in the Lucid?
No, just in general, if we start to rely on the certificate logs to provide some kind of insight into the CAs, and we actually require CAs to submit their certificates to a log, as we do from the CA forum, don't we just... What do we do if the transparency log just dies or disappears or something, and we have to revoke a bunch of certificates or no longer validate those certificates?
In general, this is correct. Like, we have this problem with the whole transparency log approach that logs have to be online for these proofs. Like, this is not like a signature that you can just validate against a public key. This has and does create headaches in some areas. The kind of approach that is used a lot in certificate transparency is that you decide how many SCTs you put into your certificate, and the policy says two or three need to validate. So you can also put 10 in there, which people do, by the way. Dtrust has 10 logs, 10 SCTs in their signatures, in their certificates. Three of these logs I have never seen before, but they have 7 that validate, and that makes it go. So yeah, this is a bit of a architectural problem with this whole approach. On the other hand, you have the one case where you don't need to have like private key management is easier here than in other scenarios, so you have also upsides. But yes, it's a problem that you have to engineer around.